Welcome back to the Shaw's Law Podcast. You know who I am and what I do. I'm your host, Rob Shaw, a.k.a. the Pod God. Today, I have with me another Rob, Rob McLam of the Wilson Times. He's an NC State beat reporter. He's a part of Inside Pack Sport. And he's from my dad's hood. He's from Durham, North Carolina, where... What do we call my dad besides P-Nix? Like where Pod God God was raised? I don't even know. Rob, what's up?
Not much. Good to hear from you. Yes, where God's dad's from. The dad of God.
Yeah, like, first, Durham is a special city to me. My dad, like I said, my dad was raised there. I spent summers there. My little brother lived there for a year. I still have aunts, uncles, cousins, and a lot of family down there. Just tell them about the amazing city that you reside in.
Well, Durham, I was born there. I was born at Old Watts Hospital, which is now where the North Carolina School of Math and Science is located. I'm old school Durham, and it's a wonderful place. It's got a great heritage. It's got a background where it's really a lot of people are accepting of others. It's a place where people live and blend in well. Just so many things to do. Of course, you have the Duke Blue Devils are in Durham, and then nearby in Chapel Hills, North Carolina, the Tar Heels. And then in the capital, Raleigh, is where NC State, the school I attended and the team I cover now, the college team I cover. Of course, so as a young boy, I was a ball boy for the Durham Bulls. Everybody knows the Durham Bulls through the movie. I was actually an extra in that movie. I was probably maybe in middle school then. Just a great place to live, great place. I've coached high school football in Durham. I wouldn't trade it for anything. Life may take me other places, but Durham will always be home.
What high school did you coach at? Because there's a million down there.
Well, in Durham, I coached high school. I graduated from Southern. That's where I went. They're very good in football. I coached high school football at Jordan High School. And that's where Rashid Wallace is now the boys' basketball coach. I actually was there when he was announced, and I filmed him doing his intro where he introduced himself as the coach. I actually filmed it when they put it on Twitter. That was me that filmed it. And it's just a lot of great things going on at Jordan. I don't coach football there anymore. Our coach, he quit. He's now going to be an assistant coach at St. Aug's in college at Raleigh. So I don't know if I'm going to continue to coach high school football or not, but I had a great four-year run. We won consecutive conference titles at Jordan, which had never been done. So I'm really proud of that. And it's just, as I said, the area is great. I love it.
Yeah, there's just so much to do. There's a million there's a million high schools everywhere.
It's crazy.
Mount Zion's down there where, T-Mac. Right. It's a lot going on, and it's a place. I love downtown Durham, Durham Bull Stadium. I have a lot of fun memories down there with, my brother and my dad. My cousin played at Hillside and then wound up playing at Tulsa, Mike Jenkins. Mm-hmm. Football, obviously.
Right.
So now that we've waxed poetic about the Bull City, let's get into your Charlotte Hornets. Do you have any special Charlotte Hornets memories? Like, I know you grew up a Knicks fan, but are there any memories that, like, stick out since you've been covering the team or just since you've been in their market your whole life?
Yeah, so what happened with me as a young boy, there were no Charlotte Hornets and there were no Carolina Panthers. And so, long story short, I tended to root for the Knicks, the Mets, and the Jets. I went to the New York teams. There were a lot of reasons. The Hornets came around in 88. That was as I was entering high school. And it was very exciting. You had Rex Chapman. You had Muggsy Bogues, Del Curry. There was a lot of enthusiasm, and the Hornets were a popular team up until the lockout and the 98-99 lockout. And that's kind of when the fan base in terms of turnout at the old Charlotte Arena and now the new one really kind of fell off a cliff. For me, it's great memories. I know they played the Knicks in 93. I was very torn about that at the time. I was a young boy. They played in the playoffs. That was the year that Alonzo Mourning knocked out the Boston Celtics in the first round. And they played in the second round against the Knicks. They've had some good teams. Of course, in 2002, the Hornets had a legitimate shot at getting to Eastern Conference Finals, but they fell short. I believe that was against Milwaukee that year. It's just been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of great players there. And they kind of have a tendency to – they don't really – I don't want to say stay under the radar. Maybe that's a little strong, but they always sort of tend to be that team that's – when they have a good team, they're sort of overlooked to an extent, and I think it kind of fits this area because there's a scrappiness to this area.
So you brought up the 2002 team, and then like things just started like running through my head, like, oh crap, I forgot about Baron Davis and David Wesley, and Jamal Mashburn.
Yeah, those guys came from the Heat. Those guys, you know, the Knicks had knocked out the Heat 3 years in a row. They played in the playoffs 4 years in a row. The Knicks would have probably beat them all four, but they had the fight with Charlie Ward and P.J. Brown. P.J. Brown eventually went in that trade to the Hornets as well. He was dealt, I guess they broke the team down. They dealt him for Anthony Mason. It might have been an Anthony Mason deal. So it's been a while. I'm sorry if I'm messing this up, but I know they were very, very good. And I think then they ended up playing the Heat in the playoffs and knocking the Heat out maybe 1 year. Maybe it was 0-1. But, yeah, there were just some great teams, really fun, energetic. The guy that I went to school with does podcasts with me. His name's John Stout. He's from Charlotte. Those teams, I could talk to him for hours about those teams. He loves those guys. And they were fun to watch. And when you go back to the 88 and 89 when they first came, they had Kelly Trepuka. They had those guys. They were on locally in the Triangle. And you could watch them on TV, and that was a big thing back then. You know, back then you didn't have all these cable options. Back then you had the big cable box where you had to get up and turn the button. And they were on locally, and you could see NBA games. And I think that's sort of what's one thing that's missing for them is they don't have that access into Eastern and Central North Carolina like they used to, because it really was a love affair in the state of North Carolina and South Carolina too. It's sort of dissipated over the years. And that's one thing they really need to try to get back.
And is it what happened during the lockout? Did they lose? Were their rights lost, or they just lost momentum?
They lost momentum. Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. They lost momentum. George Shinn, the owner, had problems. He kind of turned out to be sort of a creep. You know, there was a love affair with George Shinn. He, like a lot of these owners, you know, you build them up. They're going through the same thing now with Jerry Richardson. They just went through it anyway with the Panthers, where it turns out he was sort of a perv. He was sort of a guy that holier than thou, you know, putting up a front. I think he got into it with a cheerleader, and I think ultimately, like, the cheerleaders, someone in her family ended up committed suicide. It was just a lot of different things. And then, of course, he took the team to New Orleans, and that was really a slap in the face to all the people that had kind of supported him through all those years, because he was, you know, if you look at the Hornets from 88 to 99, they were top five in attendance every year. And they were selling out most of their games. Now, some of that is attendance numbers is fudge, because you get owners will, you know, they'll have like 200 seats left. Well, they'll buy the 200 seats and give them away so they can get credit for sellout. But still, they were getting attendance that blows the doors off what they're getting pre-COVID, the type of attendance. They weren't selling out the playoff games a few years ago when they played Miami at home. I mean, there were walk-up crowds buying tickets to those games. So the fan support is a lot different. And I think with Charlotte, what they need to do is try to find a way to sell the Carolinas theme to it. They're getting big crowds at the Carolina Panthers through that. And I think they need to try to find that connectivity with the Carolinas. And then once you have that, you build from within, build from out off that play, that foundation. And that's where they are. And it can be done. It can be done. It's happened before. They were a wildly popular team. You look at their teal uniforms. Those are the kind of uniforms, that's the look kids are across the country are going to want to buy. Their uniforms look cool. You know, they're playing as we speak right now. They're playing in Orlando. They're wearing their teal with the pinstripes with a Jordan logo on it. You can't tell me kids won't buy that stuff. And that's, you know, the opportunity for growth is there.
Yeah, those jerseys with the pinstripes and the teal are mean. Like those are fire.
I think so, and it's also now a heritage to where you were when you started. They digressed a lot with their uniforms. Sometimes you need to sort of stay the course, and I think the Carolina Panthers are a team are an example of that. They haven't really had any changes. I think they tweaked the logo on the helmet a little bit, made it a little bigger, but nothing drastic. They wear the same thing over and over and over again. The Packers, they wear the same thing over and over and over again. These teams that sort of deviate, they're doing it because they want the quick dollar, but what happens is you get away from the lineage, and then that's when you get apathy, and that's when you get, you drift away from who you really are. They're playing the Magic right now. The Magic are another team. Put the Magic back in those pinstripe uniforms they wore in the mid-90s. Yeah, I mean, put them in, and it would be the same thing. So, the Hornets have room for growth, in my personal opinion. But it has to start with the product on the floor, of course.
All right, I do want to talk about this current Hornets team, but you've taken us on a path that leads me to the question: the Bobcat years. Mm-hmm. Those, I assume, what you were talking about is brand recognition and retaining like your image. Those years have to hurt, or do we just try and sweep those under the rug?
No, I don't think you sweep them under the rug. I think the people who were there and survived it, the fans and the, you know, media guys and all that who survived that, should take it sort of as a source of pride. There was, New Orleans was the Hornets, so you weren't going to be the Hornets. It was actually quite nice of the Hornets in New Orleans to give them that name back. Yeah, to give them that. They wanted to be the Jazz. Utah would not give them the Jazz back. But they still were kind enough. Now, there's probably some bantering there between David Stern or whomever. You know, someone probably coerced them to do it. But ultimately, the Pelicans gave up the team nickname, and that's helped the Hornets. They're back in the teal. They're back in the Bobcats were a great uniform. It was a great look. They just weren't well run, and their potential was there for them as well. It just, you know, it wasn't the same. I think, again, a lot of people in Charlotte, Mecklenburg County, that area, were burned by what happened with George Shinn, and they want to see something, and I think they're starting to see an investment. They're starting to see the move back to the tradition and the move back to the identity that they know and love. Now they got to get their drafts right, and they got to get their player transactions correct. There's still some work there to be done, but they made some positive moves in this offseason.
That they did, and let's jump into them. We're going to do some quick additions and subtractions. I'll start with the subtractions, and if there's anybody you want to talk about that was subtracted after I go through the list, jump in, and then there are a couple that I'm probably going to ask about specifically.
Sure.
Nicholas Batum is gone. He's now a member of the Los Angeles Clippers, which I think is a little underrated. Dwayne Bacon is also gone. Willie Hernan Gomez, Kobe Simmons, and Ray Spalding. Any of them you want to say something about?
Well, Bacon was a high-octane guy. He probably needed a change of pace because I think he was kind of caught in a rut in Charlotte. I spoke to Dwayne when he was in Greensboro. He went back to Greensboro at the end of last season, what it turned out to be the end of last season because it was cut short, and he was just freaking out. He was scoring 53 points, 44 points. He was just torching the G League, and it was like, this is a guy that's playing against. It was like man against boys, really. He could do whatever he wanted at the G League. So he's an NBA player, and as we are recording this right now, he's in the game competing for the Magic against the Hornets. So, you know, he kind of needed to go somewhere and find a niche, and to go somewhere where you know, they have a coach that was there when he was in Charlotte, you know, the coach that was there when he got drafted by the Hornets and when he got picked up. That's probably, there's some synergy there, and that maybe that'll help kickstart his career. He's also, you know, he went to school at FSU, which is, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours down the road from Orlando. So, you know, there's some familiarity, and I think he's a guy that could contribute at the NBA level. The rest of the guys really, I want to say inconsequential, but, you know, Gomez, you know, you're not missing much. You replace that with Jalen McDaniels. The big one, of course, is Nick Batum, as you said. And with Nicholas, you figured you would let him play out. And pay him the $27 million, and then you'd have the free cap space. But they chose to get Gordon Hayward now, so now they're basically paying Gordon Hayward an extra $9 million. But he's not getting that money, but they're paying $39 million per year for Gordon Hayward for the next 3 years because they've stretched provision platoon. And that was a wild move. I would have thought that they were going to let it play out, let him just leave, which is probably what they're going to do with Cody Zeller. But I guess they thought Hayward was just somebody they had to have. And if that meant eating it over 3 years, you know, that was what they wanted to do. I'm not sure I would have done that, but Batum is going to help out Clippers. He's going to get out there. He's going to, because it's a veteran team, because it's a team competing at a high level, he's going to come off the bench. He's going to he started some exhibition. He's going to do what they ask him to do. He's going to be a role player, and he's not going to complain. So I think that's a good addition for him from a Clippers perspective. But, you know, those guys, their careers, they really had not little to offer the Hornets from where they're at. The Hornets are a young team. They need depth, and they need to build.
So you're super plugged into the team, because the person I wanted to talk about was, as cool as Nick Batum is and as much as I help he'll think he'll help the Clippers, boy, was I coming at you for Dwayne Bacon. That's right. Who I needed to hear about. And you gave me all the information I needed.
Yeah, Bacon is ready to play in the NBA. Now, is he going to be a guy that starts? Is he going to be a guy that goes out there and gets 20 and 10? I don't know. I mean, if he does, it's probably going to be in a situation similar to Charlotte, but they just don't have the glut of players at his position. But when we went down to the G League and he played for Greensboro, and you get granted, Greensboro, their G League team this past season, or last season now, they were just terrible. I mean, they were terrible. They went like 3 months without winning a game. They lost 19 or 20 in a row, something. They only won 7 the whole year. They were just pitiful. He went out there and they actually won a game or two with him. He lifted them up 50 points, 40 points. He was getting rebounds, assists. He just did it all. And it was like, it really almost looked like it was a lack of an effort thing. So I think Bacon is a guy that's really going to prosper with this move to Orlando. And he's going to be someone that he has something to give at the NBA level. I just don't know that he would have had it to give at Charlotte. So I think it's a good move for him. And I don't really know that Charlotte loses a lot with him going.
All right, let's get to the additions. The big ones are LaMelo Ball and Gordon Hayward, obviously. I'm a sucker for Kentucky, so we'll add in Nick Richards, who I'm not all the way sure is going to even make the team. And we're in Duke country, and I said my dad and brother are Duke fans, so we'll throw a bone to Vernon Carey. Woo-hoo. And I'm actually very interested to hear your thoughts on Grant Riller.
Well, he's probably not going to make the team. Best case scenario, he's probably a G Leaguer. But then you have this situation with the COVID. I don't know how the G League's going to work, if Greensboro will field a team, if they'll be in a bubble. I don't know. I don't see him making the roster. The numbers aren't good for him. As far as some of the other guys they've picked up, you mentioned Vernon Carey. I'm keen to see what he can be. And I think because you're going to probably see after this season that starts this next week, Cody Zeller's either going to get dealt at the end of the year or he's going to be allowed to walk. They're not going to pay him 13, 14, 17 million, whatever, to stick around in Charlotte. If they do, they're crazy. So they're going to let him walk and free up that cap space. Can Vernon Carey give them what Zeller does? Zeller is a guy who's probably overpaid, even in today's financial, even in the makeup of way the NBA is financially. But he does give you some things. He's a guy that can give you 11 points per game, 8 rebounds a game. Those are decent numbers. Can Carey do that? And can he do it on rookie scale? If so, then that really helps out the Hornets a lot. So Vernon Carey is one of those key components for this coming season that I'm very interested in. I think if he's a guy that can give them quality minutes, and if you're seeing the Hornets in the fourth quarter playing Carey ahead of Zeller, then that really bodes well for the future of that organization.
Where were you on the LaMelo Ball pick? You guys had the 3 pick. What did you want to happen? I know 3 doesn't give you complete control, but there's a lot. Where were you?
I like that they picked LaMelo Ball. I like it for a lot of reasons. I like the fact that he's a guy that can pass the ball well. He's basically like his brother. He doesn't shoot well. He can pass. He can rebound. He's a triple-double waiting to happen. He's got size. He's also, what I like about him is he played professionally in Lithuania a little bit, but more so in Australia. And so he gives you that experience of the family background, of course, and then the fact that he's played against grown men since he was 16 years old or whatever. So I like the LaMelo Ball pick. The other thing I like about LaMelo Ball is he gives Charlotte name recognition. Now people in San Antonio, people in Boise, Idaho, people in Seattle, Washington, people all over the world that follow NBA are going to follow the Hornets because they have a guy that has global appeal. He has that. And he's a guy that has more IG followers. He's a guy that has more Twitter followers than the Hornets do. And, you know, that's not the end all be all, but you, if you're an organization and you have Michael Jordan as an owner, you should be popular, especially we talked about the uniforms and the going back to the old school look. You should be more popular than what you are. And in a transient city like Charlotte, where most of the people there are from somewhere else, a lot of times they're going to come to the games and they're going to want to watch the other team. You need to find ways to get them to come in and watch your guys. And LaMelo Ball is one of those players. You need someone with that panache. That was the we're going to probably talk about Gordon Hayward a little later, but that was the weird thing for me about signing Gordon Hayward for $30 million and then giving him basically paying an extra $9 million for 3 years to get him by getting rid of Batum by the stretch provision. I don't know that Hayward's that guy that you're going to see someone in Kansas buying a Gordon Hayward jersey. I don't see that. You know, so what does he provide financially at $30 million a year? Are you going to make a profit on Gordon Hayward in terms of wins and losses, in terms of merchandising? I don't really see that. But with LaMelo Ball, he gives you that. And he's a basketball player who has high upside. So I like it from all avenues. I think it was a great pick. I think the only, you know, they had Wiseman was ahead of him. Maybe Wiseman would have been a guy if you were one or two. Or if he fell to three, maybe you would have. But to get LaMelo Ball for the Hornets, to me, I rate it similar to getting Baron Davis. I think it's the same type of pick.
So for me, LaMelo Ball was number one on my board. He just, I don't like the term, but like you called it panache.
Yeah.
He has the it factor. I think right. Of the reason Gordon Hayward even signed there is, hey, things are now interesting in Charlotte. And I know that Gordon Hayward signed a restricted free agent offer the first time when he was with the Jazz, so he's always had some connection to Charlotte. But I think the LaMelo puts butts in seats, and he's interesting. He's just like his brother, like you said. He's worse defensively, but he has like all the swag that. It's like he took the swag from all the brothers. Like, look, Jello, you're not going to have this. Lonzo, I'll save you a little bit. But, like, just the way he carries himself is just uber confident the whole time. Like, look, I belong here. And not only do I belong here, I'm going to do things here. And people are drawn to that, not just fans, but I think teammates as well. They're going to want to play with him.
Yeah, with the Hornets, you never see them on TNT. You never see them on ESPN. You never see them on ABC. And part of that is their record, you know. But you see other teams that don't have the great record. The Knicks are on there all the time. Of course, the Knicks are in the biggest city in the United States. But, you know, the Hornets don't have that. So what do you need players that have that appeal. You need that. But you need to do it within the concept of what you're trying to do, build. And I think Ball fits that to a T. I think because he gives them, as you said, a brand name. He gives them somebody with some confidence, but at the same time, he's the type of guy who fits within what they needed. They need a guy who can go 1, 2, or 3. You can play Ball in a small lineup. They can go Devontae Ford, LaMelo Ball, and Terry Rozier, and teams are going to have problems. They can go, you know, small ball, have one of the Martin twins playing 4 and P.J. Washington at 5. He gives them options, and when you have guys like that that can, you know, when you rebound, say PJ gets the rebound, it doesn't matter who's out there. He can outlet to 2 or 3 different people. That's how you get an offense running. That's how you get a system going. And it's an exciting style. And that's what the Hornets need. They need to find ways to generate not a brand, not just predicated on jerseys, which those things are important, but just a brand where they have a guy that's like, fans want to see them. You know, fans want to know what the Ball family is up to. They want to, right or wrong, good or bad. They've created that mythology about them. And I think it's a good get for a Charlotte. I wanted him, you know, from when I looked at all the guys that were up there and available, I thought Wiseman or Ball, those are the two you really need to try to find a way to get to. And I think he's going to be a great addition. Now, in 3 years, will he stay in Charlotte? That's a question, but you cross that bridge when you get there.
If he's the player that it sounds like you and I believe he is, I just assume he stays because we've never seen a real guy, like a guy who's a real player, turn down the extension and just take the qualifying offer and go into unrestricted free agency. Like, nobody plays that year on the qualifying offer if they're even semi good.
Yeah, and also he could sign that first one, and you know, he's gone 7 years in the league. He's only mid-20s. He can bounce then, which is what Kemba, Kemba spent that long in there. He was a little older. So, I mean, there's a lot of ways to go about it. He can play it up to a point. Anthony Davis did the same thing. That was the guy the Hornets should have had, or the Bobcats should have had. They ended up with Michael Kidd-Gilchrist because they were one of the worst teams in NBA history, but they lost the lottery to New Orleans. So, you know, you just sometimes they take that first contract, take it about halfway in, and, you know, they'll, you know, force a trade. There's a lot of ways to go about it, but the Hornets are taking the Orlando Magic's approach from the mid 90s. What they did was every draft, we're going to get one guy, one position, and that's what they're doing. And they've had, you know, Devontae Graham was actually a trade with the Hawks. They had the Hawks pick him, or they traded with the Hawks so they could get him. In the second round, they're picking guys, one, two guys per draft, and sort of building around it. Mitch Kupchak cannot do in Charlotte what he did with the Lakers. The Lakers show up at your door. You're going to listen. The Hornets, you know, maybe that's why they got Hayward. They had to overpay to get him. That's probably what they're going to have to do for the first one, two, three guys they signed. They overpaid for Rozier as well. But they're building. They're getting one, two, three guys each draft, each free agency cycle. And, you know, and I think it's set up where in 22, 23, they could be a really good team.
Who starts for the Hornets this year?
Well, you'd have Rozier. I think Ball will come off the bench. You'll have Rozier, probably Graham, Hayward, Washington, and then Cody Zeller. I think Cody Zeller will start. Will he get the back end minutes in the fourth quarter? That remains to be seen. I think P.J. Washington can have a big year for the Hornets. I'm really interested to see what type of growth he has. He'll play four. He could be a stretch four. He could be a stretch five. I'm really keen to see him, how he does. I think LaMelo will probably be a bench guy most of the season, assuming no injuries. And that's another good thing for the Hornets. If you look at the one Hornets team that was really good, it was under Steve Clifford, and that was probably 2016. They had Kemba Walker at point guard, but then the second stringer was Jeremy Lin. They had Jeremy Lamb coming off the bench that year. They had some good players, and so their second team was really where they created separation in a lot of games. And I think the Hornets this year have as much depth as that team had, and as probably as much depth as the team has had since they came back as the Bobcats. However many years ago that was.
So some of that depth is Miles Bridges, LaMelo Ball, and Malik Monk. Can you talk to us about what are the expectations for Bridges this year? Like, what kind of growth would you like to see out of him?
Well, Bridges is another one sort of similar to PJ. What type of growth is he going to have? Can he be a guy that comes off the bench and gives you 8 to 12 points a game, 6 to 8 rebounds a game? Is he going to stretch his game? What you're hoping for is that Bridges, Ball, Monk maybe, you know, even the twins, Cody and Caleb, some of those guys end up being guys you say at the back end of games when the, you know, in the fourth quarter, the final 6 minutes, even though they're not the starters, they're getting a lot of burn because they can contribute against another team's top five or starting five. So, as far as Bridges, he's still, again, another young player. And he's a guy where if he can expand his game and get to the point where he's dependable, get to the point where he can contribute in meaningful minutes and they're competing at a level where, you know, maybe they're, you know, competing for that eighth spot, seventh spot in the playoffs, in the seeding, that's growth. But I think Miles and PJ are the two guys that are, I don't say they're interchangeable, but they're two guys that I definitely would keep an eye on as far as their growth. I want to see PJ Washington be a 15-10 guy. I would love to see Miles be a 10-6 guy off the bench because he's going to have ebbs and flows. Some days, you know, you're not going to get the burn you normally get. So it's, you know, but what are your totals for 32 minutes? What are your totals average out to 48 minutes? Per game sometimes is sort of a bad stat to look at. What are you getting when you play is another one. Are they going to be a plus-minus team in a positive direction when Bridges and Ball get minutes? That's a big thing because if that second team does well, Charlotte can compete for a bottom spot in terms of the playoffs.
I told you I'm a Kentucky guy. Just be honest with me. Is it over for my boy Malik Monk?
No, I don't think so. I think Malik, he's sick right now. He's there. He's had some COVID issues. They've set him out. I guess they put him in the protocol or whatever. But no, I don't think it's over. And I think he's kind of in a similar boat as Bacon. I think he's a guy that can contribute in the right spot. The question is, will the Hornets be the right spot? The problem the Hornets have is you have so many young players. What they really need is more of a veteran mix. And so guys like Bacon and Monk, really, there may be situations where they do fit in with a different team better because that team has more veteran leadership and they can be the younger guy and it's a settled role. Whereas when you have so many young players like the Hornets do, you're basically having a lot of guys scrap for that top five, scrap to be in that second team. I think Malik Monk has got a lot of potential. I think Malik, like Dwayne Bacon, he's a guy that has something to offer in the NBA. I believe also that it could be with the Hornets. I think he has better potential with the Hornets than Bacon did. I think Bacon had kind of ran its course. You knew that last year. But with Malik Monk, it could be that maybe one of the Martin twins is a guy you would jettison and get rid of. I don't know that the Martin twins, you know, are they going to be like the Morris twins? Are they going to want to play together and then get pissed off when one of them gets traded? You remember that scene a few years ago when they were both with Phoenix? They took less to stay with the Suns, and then when the Suns traded one of them, the other one had to go. He said, I'm done. You lied to me. I don't know if the Martins will feel that way or not, or if they're comfortable playing on another team. They have to be. It's a job. But I think Monk, I would rate Monk as somebody who's a definite 8-9 guy. In terms of the depth, I guess if you say a depth chart, too deep, I would rate him as definitely the eighth or ninth guy on the team, and that's a guy that can have valuable minutes and valuable production.
Okay, that's good to hear. That warms my Kentucky heart, and it's sure. A really rough college season for us. So I need all the positivity we can get.
You'll get through it. You'll get through it, man.
The Martin twins, are they North Carolina kids? I know they were at NC State and then transferred to Nevada together.
Right.
Are they North Carolina kids?
Yeah, no, they're from Western North Carolina. They were from North Carolina, and then it's weird because NC State had a guy, Maverick Rowan, who was really he struggled, but for some reason the coach there at the time, Mark Gottfried, liked him and gave him 35 minutes a game. And so the Martins transferred to Nevada, and, you know, it was just a terrible loss for NC State. They had a great career there, or a great season there at Nevada. They went from the Wolfpack of NC State to the Wolfpack of Nevada, and I think they made the Elite Eight that year and brought that program a lot of credibility. They're grinders. Their games are a little different, but overall, they're guys that can, you know, I think, to me, I look at the Martins. They could also be guys 7, 8, 9 off the bench. At some point, the Hornets are going to have to either, in terms of their guys 6 through 13, I think at some point they're going to need some veteran mix in there. And that's part of the problem. The only veteran they really have is Biyombo, and he's a guy who's in his second stint with Charlotte. other than that, I think they need a little more. They need a guy that's maybe a 10-year vet, 12-year vet to come in and that's where maybe the Martin Twins or Malik Monk or somewhere down the road will get sent away. Not because they don't have the ability to play at that level, but because in terms of the Hornets' needs, they need some more veterans on this team. They do have a veteran on the starting five in Zeller, but Zeller's, you know, he's not really the rah-rah leader guy. They need some guys that talk it up, some guys that, in terms of younger players, they could kind of mold their, lifestyles after, you know, guys that veteran, you know, okay, this guy eats right. He lives right. This is how you become a guy who's valuable in the league. I need to emulate him. That type of guy, you know, someone who's been there 10, 12 years. And I don't see enough of that with the Hornets roster. So that might be where you get some of those guys sent away, but it's not it's not anything negative towards their game. It's just more of a what the Hornets need as opposed to what they have.
Can you see Gordon Hayward being that guy?
I've never seen him as the vocal type in Utah or Boston. Of course, in Boston, he really didn't get a lot of run, but you know, he was on a veteran team in Boston. I think Utah, they were younger. I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, maybe for that kind of money, he should be. For $30 million, you know, if you look on the horizon and say, okay, we need leadership, we need guys who show us the way, you know, for that kind of cheddar, yeah, I would say so. But I think he's another one kind of like Zeller where he does it. It's not that he's not showing you how to be a true professional. It's just he's not vocal about it. You have to emulate him. You have to watch him. And everybody that's played with him, you know, Kimball Walker up in Boston, they all say great things about Hayward. $30 million, that's a lot of money. So, yeah, you're going to need something from him because on the back end of that contract, it's not going to be good. You're going to be paying him $30 million a year when he's 33, maybe 34 years old. And I don't know that teams are going to want to take that off of you. You saw the struggles they had getting rid of Batum. They couldn't get rid of Batum for $27 million. But when they stretched provisioned him, all of a sudden he became a valuable enough asset that the Clippers wanted him, and they're starting him in preseason games. That tells you right there, these guys that run these other teams aren't stupid. They're not going to just say, okay, yeah, he can help us, but we're going to give you pound for pound value, you know, because he can help us. No, we're going to try to get him cheap. And they waited until the Hornets stretched provisioned him, and that's probably on the back end of his contract what you're going to get out of Hayward. So he does need to provide some leadership in that regard. I don't know if he can, but, you know, for that kind of investment, you know, I think the Hornets have a right to expect that.
All right. Who pops this year? You said the Hornets don't get a lot of national TV games, but I'm watching one day on League Pass and I go, damn, I didn't realize so-and-so could play this good. What Hornet am I talking about? Who pops off this year?
It's got to be Devontae Graham. Devontae Graham can be an all-star in the right situation. Devontae Graham has those skill sets. I think P.J. Washington can build his game up where maybe not this year, but in another year or two, he can be a guy who is 20-10, but also can step out, not just banging inside. He knocks his threes down. So but I would say Devontae Graham, if you're going to pick one guy, I think he's got the potential to be an all-star. He's from Raleigh. He's from North Carolina, another local guy. They tend to pick a lot of the Tar Heels, and you know, now they've got some Duke guys. They want those local flavor with the Martin Twins. You know, I think Graham is really, really special. He should have been the most improved player of the year. He should have won that award. And I think it's pretty, it's generally, construed, you know, for everyone around the league that he got ripped off from winning that award. The growth he made to last year, he was 18 points a game, 7.5 assists. And no one saw that coming. And this was a second round guy that, you know, the Hornets got, via the trade. It was a trade with the Hawks. And so that's a double whammy. You got it. You got this guy to help you and you got him from a division in a trade with a division rival. So I think Devontae Graham has the potential to be a 23 to 25 point per game guy. I think he has the potential to get up to 9, 8, 9, 10 assists a game. It depends on who he's playing with. It depends on the style he's playing. But to me, that is a guy. If the Hornets get in a situation where they say, okay, we have to break this down, this isn't working, trust me, There'll be a lot of teams coming in for Devontae Graham. If they choose to break the team down or they go into tank mode or whatever, Devontae Graham will be the pick of the litter on that in that group.
All right, and he's a Carolina kid as well, correct?
Right, he's from Raleigh.
He was supposed to go to, I believe the story is he's supposed to go to Appalachian State and somehow wound up at Kansas.
Right, he committed and signed with App State. Jason Capel was the coach, didn't want to let him out of it. And, you know, NC State really wanted him. What happened was the big boy schools started coming in and App kind of, Capel kind of stuck to it, but eventually it worked out. He got to Kansas, and he was great with the Jayhawks. He had a great career there, and I just think he has a world of potential. I really believe he can be a guy to fill it up. And you look at the Hornets, I guess in their history they've had guys, you know, sort of feel like Glenn Rice was a guy that filled it up for a time being. You know, David Wesley was a, you know, there, he had a little run there. I think he can be one of the ones that leaves that organization and, you know, who knows, maybe he'll get his jersey hung up in the banners one day there. I think he can be one of the really, really great Charlotte Hornets. He's got the skill set to do it. And you put him with LaMelo Ball and you put him with PJ Washington and you put him with, you know, Bridges and, you know, a lot of young guys. The Hornets, I think in 2 or 3 years could be special, but I think Grant will be the bell cow of that team. Graham.
Much more of your time. I just have one last question.
Sure.
What is a successful season for Hornets fans where they walk away saying the organization is moving in the right direction? What needs to happen this season for them to feel like that?
Well, Jordan, as an owner, is opposed to tanking. And they probably should have tanked. A lot of teams do that. So they're not going to tank. I think if the stars align, they could compete for a playoff spot on the back end, maybe 8-7. To get that wouldn't be completely unreasonable because I think they have a good second team. They have depth. So you look at the Hornets team that a few years ago when Steve Clifford took them, they were 48-34. And they were sixth seed, but they were actually in a four-way tie. They finished with the third best record in the East. In their conference, to get to 7 and 8 is not a drastic climb. It's not. If they come up a little short, if they compete for a playoff spot, and they get to the point, say where they finish 9-10, that's not good for the draft, obviously. That's why a lot of teams like to tank. But I think that would also show that they're on the come up. And with so many young players, and with the salaries of with the salary of Zeller coming off, you're going to free up a lot of cap space. There's a potential for growth too. Depends on what Vernon Carey does, who they have to go after. But I think this year, if they made the playoffs, that would be a win, a major win for their organization. If they compete towards the end for a playoff spot, they're sort of showing, okay, this thing is going in the right direction. That's where I would look at it. Jordan's going to not want to tank. He's not want to yield that playoff spot. He's going to want to make it. So that's their mantra. We'll see if that helps them out.
Rob, thank you for your time. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Shaw's Law Podcast, Hornets edition. Once again, we're going to thank our guest, Rob McLamb. Rob, can you plug your podcast? Because I didn't plug that in the beginning. So plug your pod, please.
So I do a pod. I'm on Twitter. My name's Rob McLamb. I have a podcast. We're actually starting a new one in January. The podcast I hosted for Inside Pack Sports is just called IPS Live. We're going to start a new one in January. That's my own. That's where I digress and do the Charlotte Hornets. That'll be just called the Rob McLamb Show. So you can look out for that on my Twitter. John Stout, my buddy, he'll be producing that. I actually am attending grad school. I'm at Harvard right now. And so, I have to start a podcast for my, master's degree. So I'll have to do that. That's where I'm going to be starting. Yeah. Thank you. So I'll be starting that new one in January, for the requirements for my master's degree. But Inside Pack Sports covers NC State. We do that. I'm on there from time to time. Sometimes I host, sometimes I'm an analyst, and we cover NC State. And we've been covering the Wolfpack for about 10 years. So if you're interested in the ACC, give those guys a follow, and they'll fill you in.
That was Rob McLam, and it is at Rob McLam on Twitter. McLam is spelled M-C-L-A-M-B, just like it sounds. This has been the Shaw's Law Podcast. You know who I am. I'm Rob Shaw. Thank you for listening, and have a happy holidays, ladies and gents.